I knew that my ministerial internship, which is the 2 years I spent as a student minister in suburban Boston, would lead me to learn lots of new things. I didn't know that how to hang drywall would be one of them. A group from the congregation was traveling to New Orleans to rebuild a home near an urban Unitarian Universalist church. We would sleep at the church, work all day, and then if the evening we weren't exhausted, we could explore New Orleans. What a great idea. Until I found out, do you know how heavy drywall is? Do you know how awkward it is to carry it up a ladder, to hoist it over your head and try to hold it still in place? The house was small. It was shotgun style, a long, narrow rectangle. The home's frame was intact. It was a dark skeleton, all bones, but the house needed drywall. It needed its flesh filled in. The skeleton wasn't enough to keep the wind out or the big, hairy spiders that crawled up my arm while I was holding the drywall. The home belonged to a family of four, a grandmother who was caring for the three small children who lost both of their parents during Hurricane Katrina. The youngest couldn't even remember them. We wanted something in their lives, even if it was just their little house, to be whole. The cracks had to be covered over, so we went to the hardware store in the suburbs, one of those big stores that's bigger than a football field, and we bought rolls of insulation, fluffy, pink, cotton candy. Barbie Dreamhouse colored insulation. After a few days of stuffing, the insulation was all in and it was covered over every crevice in the wooden frame. The kids ran over after school and ran into their house. They loved it. They called it their pink, hairy house. But much to their dismay and to mine, that insulation has to be covered over. So back to the hardware superstore for drywall. Huge things nearly as tall as I am and wider than my arm span. These sheets of drywall didn't initially seem that heavy, but they magically get heavier as you put them into the U-Haul, get them out of the U-Haul, and carry them into the house. I wasn't used to this kind of labor. Coming out of graduate school, the only thing I had lifted recently was a big hardback book. And looking around the house, all 500 square feet of it, I couldn't imagine how we could ever hoist all those sheets of drywall into place. But soon, I was holding a sheet as still as I could, which wasn't still enough, as a fellow volunteer tried to nail gun it into place. The drywall went up like puzzle pieces, clicking into the correct location. If a puzzle was huge and awkward and it had huge gaps between the pieces. Who here has hung drywall? It's miserable, miserable experience. It's not fun at all. And I thought when we finished we would have this beautiful, smooth surface, but that wasn't true. It was full of gaps and cracks, and they still had to be covered over. Another layer, insulation, and then drywall, and then masking. Oh my gosh, can we just put up wallpaper and call it a day? No. Masking had to be done. Long strips, pasted, sticky, smoothed over the cracks, and then smoothed over the cracks again. The skeleton house lost all except its bones under the waters of Katrina. It needed layers and layers of repair. Pink fluff, and then drywall, and then masking. Hurricane Katrina was a natural disaster that turned into a human disaster when it was mishandled again and again by local and national and state governments. It exposed a lot of racism in this country that we prefer not to think about. It was a natural disaster that tipped off a human disaster that we're still recovering from. But sometimes it's the other way around. I want to tell you a story about forgiveness and disasters that is so wild, it's hard to believe it's true. About 15 years ago, a wildfire ripped through a coastal town in California. 12,000 acres of wild wilderness were completely decimated. Time-worn trees, ferns, underbrush, and all the critters that couldn't run or fly fast enough to get away from the fire. Just shy of 50 homes burned to the ground. More if helicopters hadn't dropped huge tarps of water onto the flames. A natural disaster that impacted every single person in this small town. Everyone knew someone whose house had burned to the ground. Everyone knew someone who was having trouble breathing because of all the soot in the air. The thing was, it wasn't entirely a natural disaster. Soon after the blaze was extinguished, four teenage boys turned themselves in at the police department. They were so sorry. They had camped illegally high on a ridge above town, and they had cooked over a campfire, but they extinguished all the flames. They covered all the embers with heaps and heaps of dirt. Still, a few hot sparks had burned underneath all that earth, and the wind carried them to the dry brush, and then the whole forest was ablaze. I did plenty of dumb things as a teenager, but as far as I know, I never inadvertently burned down 40-something houses and 12,000 acres of wilderness. This is a small coastal town. There's no anonymity. There's no being anonymous. Yeah. Soon the whole town knew it was those boys. Those four boys, what were they thinking? Everyone knows you can't have a campfire in the woods. How could they? Soon the boys' parents put their houses up for sale. There was no staying in this town. They started looking for jobs elsewhere. They had to uproot. What could they do? There was nothing to do but hang your head in shame and head out. As those boys packed their bedrooms into moving boxes, the town held a picnic to honor the firefighters who put their lives in so much danger. Everyone was there. The president of the Board of Firefighters made a speech, and after praising his team, he started in on a different topic. He said that in ancient times, individuals who damaged the community were sent outside of the town's walls. They had to live without protection, without their friends and family, in the wilderness, alone. The firefighter said that he heard the families of the four boys were thinking of leaving town, and he wanted to make it clear that he didn't think that they should. He wanted them to know that they were wanted, needed in this community. After his speech, people who lost their homes thought about it for a while, and then they publicly said they agreed with him. They wanted the boys and their families to stay inside the walls of protection of their community, inside the circle of their friendships. Soon talk in town turned from criticizing those boys to all the crazy and dumb things people remembered doing as teenagers. It was true confessions time. People bonded over their stories of wild, risky behavior, laughing for hours over high school hijinks. The boys were forgiven. The families were forgiven, and the town moved forward. Homes were rebuilt, pink, fluffy insulation against the skeleton, and then drywall, and then masking. The masking was smoothed and smoothed again. The wind was kept out. The spiders were kept at bay. Our communities, our towns, and especially our church families are just skeleton houses trying to keep out the wind and the big hairy spiders, trying to protect each other, trying to care for each other inside of our town walls. Occasionally, a disaster happens. Harsh words peel away fluffy pink insulation. They wear out the drywall. They strip away the masking. Human-made or natural, we are set aflame by fire started accidentally or on purpose. and we burn down to the barest bones of our relationships. Then, what we do is up to us. Do we stuff in the pink, fluffy insulation? Do we hold up sheets of drywall so our neighbors can staple them into place? Do we apply new insulation, or do we choose isolation? Should those boys be sent outside of the town walls? Or could the town's bonds be patched over and reinforced and repaired? Forgiveness is a commitment to staying and doing the difficult work, the sweaty, uncomfortable work of patching things up. Forgiveness means saying, yes, this is worth fixing. This is worth the labor, the long days, and the sore muscles. This month, our theme is forgiveness, and so for all of February, we will explore the dimensions of this difficult task, forgiving. Forgiveness always sounded to me like a Valentine's Day sentiment, hearts and flowers, abstract and easy. Just forgive. But true forgiveness is work. It's a labor of love. Forgiving those boys wasn't a one-time feat. It was a choice and a commitment the town's members had to make over and over again. We forgive you. We forgive you. We still forgive you. In Unitarian Universalism, we strive to live by seven principles, seven ideals that stretch us to live more ethical and abundant lives. And the second principle is justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Choosing the work of forgiveness can be a powerful way to show compassion. But I have a caveat. I don't think it's ethical or fair to talk about forgiveness without this caveat. The commitment of forgiveness isn't always the right thing. It can be a heroic choice that bonds a community, like in coastal Northern California. But if you're in a relationship that is violent, that makes you afraid, that degrades who you are as a human being, don't patch it up. Come talk to me. We're going to figure it out. We'll find a path to safety and to wholeness. Your rebuilding will happen when you're at a place that can truly keep out the cold wind. The second principle is commitment to justice and compassion applies to you here, but the compassion called for is compassion toward yourself. Abusive treatment is unjust and it's toxic. And it's a relationship that destroys equity. And both are a deep violation of our promise to strive to be compassionate beings. Sometimes the best choice is to show yourself compassion and choose not to forgive. Other times, when fires are accidental, when harsh words are said in haste, when friendship is forgotten, repair can happen, but it isn't easy. It takes a commitment to the hard work of rebuilding. Can you smooth it out together and then smooth it out again? Saying yes again and again and again. A town burned by a few of its young people committed to rebuild together, decided to patch over the cracks in their community, to do the effortful work of covering those walls and starting again. Forgiveness isn't just a nice word, a reminder of something we should do. It's tough work, it's sweaty labor, stuffing in insulation and muscling in sheets of drywall. Those boys in California, they learned that forgiveness can be radical enough to encompass even the most destructive of acts. As we reflect on forgiveness for the next few weeks, for the rest of February, let's think about the skeleton houses in our lives, the places where a lack of forgiveness has worn away the drywall, torn out the insulation. Is your skeleton house repairable? Are you up to the hard work of forgiveness? Are you strong enough to rebuild, to smooth, and then smooth again and again? Can you forgive?